White Rockin' Entertainment, podcast number 560.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins!
Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with thewareaglereader.com and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, you out there in podcast land, you are our Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we have a special guest joining us tonight. We don't do interviews and guests very often. Our show is notorious for being very insular. It's just you and me kind of yakking at each other. But every now and then, we get somebody special come along. For a while, it was Brandon Marcello. But now, Brandon's gone off to do other things. And we've got our new Auburn guy coming on. Welcome aboard, Brian Stoltz. So glad to have you.
If I knew there was a phone number earlier, I would call it all the time.
Well, we're glad to have you.
Now I know.
We're glad to have you now. We're going to have a few questions for you in just a second about what you've seen and what you've been able to ascertain from Auburn practice and a few other things. But first, I just got a couple of quick notes. John, we were talking about how you've got a lot more listener questions coming in today. It's funny because our listenership is also up about 50% in the last 2 or 3 weeks. So that means football season is fast approaching. People are turning their attention back to football. And that's a good thing.
Football is coming.
Football is coming. It's kind of like winter is coming, except without ice zombies. But with Alabama fans, so it, you know, kind of balances out.
Kind of the same.
Also,
never seen that show, but I know the reference.
There you go. Also, gotta let everybody know, because, again, our audience is rising. There's new people listening every week now for a show that's been around over 9 years. But we got new people coming every week. Is that our book is available. We Believe, Volume 1, A Lifetime of Auburn Football, Volume 1, 1975 to 1998, which covers basically Barfield, a whole lot of Pat Dye, and a little bit of Terry Bowden at the end, is available now. Go to Amazon.com or go to www.auwishbone.com and get you a copy. And it's got 10 player and coach illustrations by the yard sale artist, Jared Albrick, our good friend of the show, part of our network. And it covers in depth all the Auburn football and our reactions to it. Got a lot of interviews and other stuff. So go check that out, www.auwishbone.com. Let's waste no time, John. Let's talk to Brian since he's here. And why don't you kick things off for him?
Sure. So I just, you know, while we're doing this, I want Brian, introduce yourself. You work at AuburnSports.com, the Auburn rival site. And so tell us a bit about yourself, how you got there, how you like working there, and what your focus is.
Because you've done other stuff, too. You didn't just start. You've been kind of around the horn a little bit. Yeah,
I have. I first got my degree in marketing and worked in marketing advertising for 10 years, and then I came back, got my journalism degree at Auburn in 2013. I got hired as an intern while I was here by Philip Marshall, the great Philip Marshall, for Auburn's 247 site. And then went on the Campus Insiders, which is now Watch Stadium, with Brett McMurphy and those guys, and then joined SEC Country with AJC and Cox Media. Took a little detour to Washington State with Mike Leach. And, you know, that story's a little crazy if people know it. And then joined Major League Baseball in New York, back in New York. And at the same time, I was writing for Saturday Down South covering Auburn. And then joined USA Today, being managing editor of their site that Zach Blackerby's done a very good job of taking over since I joined Auburn Rivals. And, you know, Jay Tate and I stayed in touch, and he's always been a good supporter of mine. And, you know, he had an opening. We're not really an opening, just a position that he thought I could fill. And he called me and said, "Are you ready to move back to Auburn?" And I said, "Heck yeah." So took the job, and yeah, I'm took it running, and I'm happy to be back on the Plains.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Yeah, you've gotten to see a lot of different things. I knew that you did the USA Today thing for a while because
yeah,
I would see a few of your tweets and you'd mention mine mm-hmm. or something, and that was really cool. That was awesome. Yeah. So what? Well, first, before we change the topics, what's it like working with Jay and all that crowd? How much liquor do they require you to drink? How many hot wings are you required to eat? There's got to be like a quota, right? I don't know how this works.
Well, as far as hot wings, last week was the 500th episode of their podcast. And Voodoo was closed. Tomorrow we're supposed to take on the bomb. I'm supposed to eat at least one bomb hot wing, the very hottest. I have a sense of the palate, man. I can't do anything above medium on wings. And if I actually do this, I might actually die. So, yeah.
This could be your last appearance.
Yeah, burden is on them. No. Working with Jay and Brian Matthews and Christian and the new guy that they hired, Caleb, it's been great. I've respected Jay and Brian Matthews for a while. Got to know them when I was working for 247 down here, and we stayed in touch. And you know, it was an easy decision to join them because they're laid back, they're fun to work with. They like to drink. I know I took part in the brain drain last week while enjoying it with some Elijah Craig. And yeah, it's a great company to work for. It's a lot of fun. And we never take anything too seriously. And, you know, it's a joy.
All right, I think that's the right attitude.
Man, yeah. if everybody's job could make them sound as good as you do about that, wouldn't that be a great world? Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, I've had some jobs, including out at Wazoo, that I wouldn't say the same thing about, but yeah, it's a pleasure to be back. You know, I love the university, went to school here. It doesn't stop me from being objective about the job, but I love being back here. I love playing golf with some friends that live here and, you know, being able to see people that I'm usually only see about two or three times a year. Now I see them two or three times a week. Yeah. And yeah, so it's great. And I'm happy to be back.
That's nice. Awesome. You have a football question, John. Lead us off.
All right, so if we learned one thing from the scrimmage this weekend, what did we learn?
that the edge position is going to be one of the strengths of the defensive line. I think it was with Tyrone Truesdale's departure, I think it opened a lot of opportunities for guys like Romello Height, T.J. Moultrie, even Pegues, some guys like that. They were pretty darn good this scrimmage. I mean, I didn't get to see it. The media wasn't invited. But from all the insight and all the sources we had, they were getting after the pass rusher or after the passer, and you know, something that Auburn didn't have last year. And I think it's going to be a position that Auburn will be very good at again.
Excellent. Oh,
that's good news.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. What's the single biggest takeaway from all of the fall so far? Like, it's something that you've learned that maybe you didn't even expect or something.
Something I learned I didn't expect. Probably the skill of Donovan Kaufman, the Vanderbilt transfer. I think he's going to be a starter from day one. I think he obviously knows Derek Mason's defense. I think he can be a big leader despite being young on this defense. Even though you have a Smoke Monday and Roger McQuarrie and Chandler Wooten and all these guys that are veterans, this guy's going to come in. You know, he has a good relationship with Derek Mason. I think he's been, you know, a good guy that's went out and made plays and kind of raised the bar as far as the defensive back, which is already a loaded position for the Tigers, and I think he'll be really, really good.
I like that. And people are freaking out about recruiting, but that's a guy we got who's going to be here three more years. So that's and that guy's a future star. So I like it.
I agree.
So what have you learned about the coaching staff, the way that they, you know, coach the team in practice, teach them? What do we know about them that we didn't really know before this?
You know, I really didn't cover a Malzahn practice per se, but I've been around a lot.
Few people did because he never let anybody in there. That's
You got to see punters and kickers. No offense to Malzahn, who has actually become a good friend of mine after the fact. But, I think it's the energy in the practice that the coaches bring to practice And the fact that, you know, a lot of the schools that I've been around, they have like 15-minute intervals of practice, 20-minute. These guys have 5-minute intervals. So they can't get really sick of any drill they're doing. And they keep the energy up. The music selection is a little weird because it can go from Prince to, I don't know, like big timers. Or I'm just pulling this out from my college days. Maybe Tupac, I don't know. But R.I.P. The energy and the focus that these guys have, I think the focus has been one of the main parts. And Harsin just preaches consistency over and over and over. And I think that's something that Auburn hasn't had in a while. They didn't have, from what I heard, they didn't have many mental mistakes during the scrimmage on Saturday. Most of it was just physical that they can, you know, teach and correct and stuff like that. So that's a good sign for what Harsin can do. Plus, he gave us a hat.
I had a hat question and it got tossed out. No pun intended. But I was going to ask you, would you take the hat? I feel like you would take the hat and wouldn't complain compared to some people.
I took the hat. Thanked them for it. And there's a guy that drinks at my local bar. Can I say that on here?
You can say that.
Yeah. One of my local bars. And I saw him after. I'm like, I knew he had 3 kids. So I'm like, and he's one of the loyal readers at Auburn Rivals, auburnsports.com. And I'm like, you kids would love this hat. Just tell him it's straight from Brian Harsin, the new football coach, and stuff like that. He thankfully accepted it, and, you know, no big deal. So, you know, it was, I'm not going to say it wasn't a very kind of strange moment at the time, but, you know, it was a nice gesture by Harsin and, you know, something he didn't have to do.
Sure. Yeah. I didn't understand pearl clutching, but.
I like the way you handled it. Thank him and give it to a kid. That's the right
thing. Absolutely.
Perfect. Is there anything about the coaching staff that hasn't been talked about much, but that you've heard or seen or anything like that? Like, again, I'm kind of looking for like these little hidden gems, that little insights that maybe you would have that the average person wouldn't have, or that you've heard, like, you know, people think this, but they're actually a little more. Is there anything kind of funky like that?
I think these kids are buying into what Harsin's doing. And as far as, especially on the defense, these kids love Derek Mason. How wouldn't you? I mean, the energy and the passion he brings on the sidelines and the experience he has, you know, coaching Stanford and then Vanderbilt. I mean, even though Vanderbilt struggled at times, they still had pretty good defense most of the time. And, you know, the experience he brings, and, you know, I think these kids are totally buying in. I think that there were some bad apples that Harsin got rid of that may cause some good, better team chemistry after better than last year, knowing that the locker room was kind of not all together, and you know, everyone knows that. But I think that Harsin's doing a good job of building a culture. I know he uses that word a lot, but building a culture that that, you know, 8-4 season, 7-5 season, fine. Build on that. Build on recruiting, stuff like that. I think he's one of those guys that is very detail focused and can, you know, do things that maybe some people don't think he can do.
Well, I like that answer. So you mentioned Kaufman. Are there any other newcomers, either transfers or freshmen, that have shown you something or you've heard good things about?
Leota, the defensive lineman from Northwestern. I think he's going to be a major player this year. He's making a lot of strides. Learned defense. You know, he had a pretty good season last year for the Wildcats, and, you know, he didn't play against us in the – or, I'm sorry, against Auburn in the – I have to watch myself there. But – he didn't play against Auburn in the, Citrus Bowl, but, you know, he had 6.5 sacks, I want to say, and a lot of tackles for loss, and I think he can bring a lot to this defense. Demetrius Robinson, you know, he's still fairly new. He's only practiced for a week. I feel like he brings some experience to this offense. I don't think he's going to be wide receiver number one by the middle of the season, just because he's a 6-year player that had some good moments, had some bad moments, but I think he's going to teach these kids a lot. And, you know, like I said in an article, I think last week, he has more receptions than the rest of the wide receivers combined during his college career. So, I mean, that's pretty big experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then who was the other one? Rashawn Miller, the corner secondary player from West Virginia. I think he's going to be a big help. And I'm excited about those guys. Plus, newcomer, if you want to count him as a newcomer, Chandler Wooten.
Yep.
He sat out last year.
That's right. Coming back.
He seems like a totally different guy. He said he's like he's better teammate, better friend, better player because of sitting out the year and getting to, you know, focus on what was important. And I think he's going to be a major factor at linebacker.
That's awesome. I feel like the defense is really just trending upward. We're kind of waiting to see about the offense, I guess. But you got to feel pretty good about this defense, don't you?
I feel really good about this defense, especially after the scrimmage. You know, we say, yeah, the defensive line was able to put pressure on Bo Nix, but does that have to do with the defense, or does that just have to do with the offensive line? You don't know. The defensive line, I mean, the offensive line, they're still switching places and, you know, switching back and forth. So maybe that has something to do with it. But when Nix is getting pressured on every pass, it's so difficult. I mean, just hard to see. And it's frustrating because you know what he can do when he has protection, which we've seen very little of in the last 3 years or last 2 years, I should say.
No kidding.
And what he can do when he does get that protection, if they can figure it out on the offensive line, and have Tank Bigsby and Shivers and that Jacquez Hunter, who I should have mentioned as a newcomer who has really impressed. The kid has a lower body that I would dream to have. I mean, dear Lord, those calves are amazing. anyway, that's something on the other side. But
is that similar to our running back from 2010, 2011?
Dyer?
Michael Dyer.
Oh, Dyer, yes. I would say that, yes.
Awesome.
Yeah. I think Jacquez Hunter is going to be a big person that's going to earn his carries. It's going to be hard to keep him off the field.
Is the offensive line the primary concern and question mark right now, or is there something we don't know about that might even be a bigger question?
I think that's the biggest offense. I think that's the biggest concern for Auburn is offensive line, because last year it was the same guys, but they were just getting thrown around, and Nix didn't have time. He couldn't connect with his receivers. You know, Bigsby would make plays that he wouldn't have to make if he had an offensive line, but he was so good that, you know, he could do it. If the offensive line doesn't correct itself as far as blocking the passer, teams are going to just load the box against them. And that's when all things go on a haywire, and it could be really frustrating for Auburn fans.
So here's my theory about the offensive line in the scrimmage and to this point. Mm-hmm. That up to this point, they've been kind of evaluating the players in the offensive line individually, moving guys around, seeing where they can play, seeing, you know, which guys play right side, left side, different positions and all that. Not worried about the overall offensive line and the kind of the starting five, but just trying to see who could do what and what their strengths were and stuff. And then they're going to go back now and try to pick, you know, kind of two lines of five or whatever, mm-hmm. your best five or six guys, and put them out there and work more with them as a unit and keep it consistent. And then I think if they do that and that group practices for a week or two, and then we have a situation like this, then I'll be really super concerned.
Yes.
Right. Does that make sense? Or
absolutely. And, you know, the defense is always ahead of the offense, no matter what happens in the start of fall camp. I mean, that's from high school to college to pros. I mean, it's no secret that the defense always has the extra hand. And maybe if they can settle into a rotation, it'll be better. But it's hard to say. The other day, someone brought up to him that I think at 1 year at Boise State, he used 11 different offensive lines coupled together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Boise State playing in the Mountain West, you know, no respect to the Mountain West, but you know, you're not facing Alabama and Georgia defensive lines, and we'll see what happens with them. But I think if they continue to struggle over the next 2 weeks, that is when the concern needs to break out.
Yeah, that's fair.
Whose turn, John? I lost track.
You go.
I guess we're two. Is there any other SEC team that you've got your eye on that's maybe under the radar that could have a better season than we're expecting?
Under the radar. I think Kentucky.
Yeah.
I think that quarterback that they have, I don't even know how to spell his name. Is Levis, Levi's? Mm-hmm. Is it like the jeans?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's spelled like that.
I think, you know, with their offensive line and Chris Rodriguez, their running back, I think they could have a big year. They have a pretty favorable schedule. Mm-hmm. Their defense is not as going to be as good as it was last year, but I think they could compete for, you know, maybe even second in the SEC East. And, you know, for Kentucky, that's huge. I mean, I grew up there, and, you know, I've been to maybe more games at, well, Commonwealth Stadium. I will never call it Kroger Field. Commonwealth Stadium, been to more games, I think, there than Jordan-Hare, possibly. And maybe not anymore. Maybe that might be false now. But, you know, I grew up going to games, and they had no chance against South Carolina. So it's kind of different. Stoops has built a good foundation there. I think he fired Eddie Graham, which I think was the right call. Brought in a new offense coordinator, and, you know, they seem to like that Levi's guy. And, you know, if they can get him passing, because they've been awful the last 2 years with passing as well. I mean, back to the point where they were using who's that guy that was running the ball for them or playing quarterback.
They're basically running the option and quarterback keeper all the time. So
with Lynn Bowden. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think they could make some noise. I think some people who are overrated is LSU. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of talk of them competing for the West. I just don't see it. Yeah. I don't think Orgeron's that good of a coach. I think he fell into this lucky thing where he had 14 draft picks, the best quarterback in the nation, maybe the best wide receiver core in the nation, best, maybe one of the top running backs in the nation. And then he had the passing game coordinator and Brady, and then Dave Aranda, defense coordinator. I mean, who couldn't win with that? Yeah, I mean,
that's
maybe I couldn't, but I don't know. Maybe, but it seems like he walked into the right job, I mean, right situation there, and now he's going to be forever loved. But, you know, it could turn into a Chizik situation where after 2 years after a national title, he's out. So I think they're a little overrated. I think Auburn has a chance to win there. And although
the history there.
The history there. I was at the 2007 game when Miles just threw that pass for no reason and they caught it. I was like, dear Lord, we're not going to. Then the 2017 game was probably the most frustrated I've ever been after a game at LSU. Anyway, I think Kentucky is underrated, and I think they'll make some noise in the East. I don't think they'll win it. I think they'll finish third. But, you know, an 8-9-win season for Stoops at Kentucky, you're not going to hear Kentucky fans complain about that.
That's success for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Guys, John, I just realized that when we do volume 2 of our book and it starts in 98, like very early in chapter 1, we're going to mention winning in Baton Rouge in 99. And that will be the last time we get to say that in the entire book.
That was my freshman year here.
Unbelievable.
And, I remember watching it at Touchdowns. And,
Touchdowns, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember watching it there and just being like, what in the hell just happened? Yeah. And then we come back and lose to Ole Miss in typical Tupperville fashion the next week.
I was there. Yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah. Who missed that field goal? Damon Duvall?
Yeah, that was Duvall.
That was 2 weeks before he flipped off the camera at Tennessee.
Tennessee. And then bleached his hair and it all just kind of – up and down. He was so up and down, you know. He would have, like, these great streaks where he couldn't miss, even if the wind was – like the Florida, the kick that
Florida game.
Florida, he kicked it over to the right or whatever, and it ends up going right down the middle, and you're just like, man, he can't miss. And then he turns around and he can't hit a freaking putt, you know. So, wow.
Who's the guy at 2005 at LSU? Who's the kicker there?
Vaughn.
John Vaughn, yeah. There was a lot of jokes about that afterwards.
That was a bad one.
That's the one. If there's ever been one that we should have walked out of there. I mean, even
2017.
Yeah, but I mean, in 2005.
Kenny Irons.
2005, we had like 5 chances to win the game and missed 5 field goals. How do you do it? Come on, man. Anyway.
It's the magic and taboo of Baton Rouge, I guess.
That is it. It was just they had the hex on us. Yeah. Well.
Yep.
John, we have any other? We have a question in terms of what you do, but do you have any other football position or practice questions you want to get in there before we move towards?
No. Just let's go to this question. So the question for you, Brian, is if you were, you know, thinking about how you got to where you are today, a lot of perseverance, obviously, in there, and desire to do this job. If you were a young aspiring person out there who wanted to cover Auburn, mm-hmm. what would you tell them? What advice would you give them?
I would tell them to take any writing job you can. Because I remember in 2013, when I first started my second degree, I was, you know, just taking journalism 101, having to pass that. And my professor, John Carvalho, who I think we all know, recommended me to cover a string, be a stringer at OA News. And the first game I ever covered was at Lo Chiapoca. And I kind of knew what I was doing, but not really. And then I had to meet a deadline and stuff like that. I'm like, all right, this is kind of weird. And then 4 years later, I mean, time flashes before you. 4 years later, I was on the sidelines at USC on Memorial, where Olympics have happened and stuff like that. And, you know, things might not happen for happen that fast for some people, but I think my thing is take any writing job, free, internet, you know, just get published, get your name out there. I know that some of the people that work for me at USA Today, they took great advantage of that. I took great advantage of it with OA Now, streaming on Friday nights, 110 degree heat out in real town or whatever it was. And, and calling, the coach Childersburg instead of Childersburg or whatever it is.
Childersburg or Wetumpka or whatever you were, sure.
Yeah. I still can't pronounce Lafayette or whatever.
Don't even try. I'm from Sylacauga, so I'm afraid to know Sylacauga. What you
called. Yeah, I would not pronounce it, but like even Lafayette, I'm like, no, I just pronounce it Lafayette because of Hamilton, I guess. But just take every advantage you can of getting your name out there, publishing stuff. Especially when you're in college. I mean, college, people don't look at your resume. They don't look at your GPA. They look at what you wrote and what you got done in this business. And, you know, if you have Plainsman experience, I got started with the Plainsman, then 247. And I took every opportunity I could just to get better as a writer. And, you know, I enjoyed every minute of it. I'm still getting better. People on the bunker are definitely letting me know that I suck. But at times, but you know, that's the bunker for what it is.
Oh, yeah.
Oh dear Lord. But you know, just take every advantage that you can and not be afraid to ask for advice and not be afraid to take on just small assignments like covering, you know, real town versus whoever. You know, not that it's a small assignment because these are big assignments for those kids getting access or getting published or name published in the, newspaper, getting you know, features, stuff like that. You might think, oh well, it's just a football game for them, for you, but these kids take it seriously, their parents take it seriously. And yeah, so I always go back to what Will Ferrell said about I know this is weird, but what he said about joining Saturday Night Live. He was told by Norm Macdonald that take every part you can, because, and Will Ferrell took that to heart. He said on a podcast I was listening to a couple of years ago, he said, even if I had one line as like a guy delivering pizzas, I knew I could get a laugh. So he took every opportunity to kind of like get his name out there, get experience on camera and stuff like that. I think it's the same for a writer. Just do as much as you can. Love what you do, because a lot of people would kill to do this. There's, you know, as much as we might complain about access and stuff like that and, you know, deadlines, it's still a great job. And I love everything. I mean, I don't wake up a day and think, oh my God, I should do something else. I love what I do now. And yeah, it's great.
That's awesome. All right, man. Well, we're going to let you go. We really, really, really appreciate you coming on. It's awesome. And we hopefully can get you back on every now and then. If you have, we can kind of dig around in your brain for more cool information and stuff. I had a good time.
Well, I have no life. So I'm pretty available whenever you guys are.
Thank you.
I live here by myself. If I'm not on the golf course or not working, I'm usually watching Murder, She Wrote, actually. Right. I love Murder, She Wrote, my show.
Angela Lansbury.
Angela Lansbury is my girl. She's a national – well, she's English, so – but she's a world treasure. She's not a national treasure like Betty White. Angela Lansbury is a world treasure.
The showrunner and writer for much of that show was Joe Straczynski, who created and wrote most of Babylon 5, which I run a podcast about. So it's cosmic.
Really?
It's cosmic, man. It's all tied together.
Murder, She Wrote, Babylon 5. Are there crossovers?
You know the other thing he wrote? He wrote Murder, She Wrote, Babylon 5, and the real Ghostbusters cartoon.
I love that. Back in the 80s?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I love that cartoon.
Yeah, yeah. He's everything he does is great. He just kind of bounced around. He did cartoons for a while. He did the murder mystery for a while, and then he got to create his own science fiction show. That's it. Yeah.
Now, Babylon 5 is like Star Trek and Star Wars to me. I've never seen it. I don't know what it's about. But if he wrote that, I might have to watch it out. Watch
it's
it because
so good. It's so good. We just finished reviewing all of season one. We're starting on season two. It's on HBO Max. So there you go.
Okay, I have that.
There you go, man. Yeah, check it out. Yep. Brian, we appreciate it. Take it easy.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
We'll talk to you soon.
You.
All right.
That was really good. Really good conversation with Brian.
Yeah. Glad to have him on. I'm glad that we have somebody that, you know, that we like can have on to talk kind of a little insider stuff a little bit because we lost Brandon for the best. I mean, I haven't asked him, but he's doing national stuff now, so I'm sure he's... You know, he would probably politely decline because he's got bigger fish to fry now than you and me. But anyway, that was really, really cool. A couple of quick notes before we get into our usual stuff. Did you see that Joey Gatewood is not even second string at Kentucky? He ended up tied for second, maybe third, and as we like to say on this show, Joey Gatewood at Kentucky. So Joey Gatewood is entering the portal, John. Again.
He is. I mean, again, I think they changed offense coordinators. I think he would have fit better with what they were doing and doesn't fit as well with what they're trying to do. So I wish him the best.
There you go. I have a lengthy and in-depth comparison of the SEC and college football to the English Premiership and the UEFA Champions League. I will save that for another night. We haven't got time. We're moving on.
Okay.
But let's remember, because I want to go into it. I tweeted a little bit about it, but it is a thing. I think the SEC is turning into the English Premiership, and the playoffs will be like the Champions League, and the goal will be, it's just like in the Premiership right now, there's the goal of winning the Premiership, and you're the champion of England, but the other goal is get into the Champions League. And I think that, and like four teams do that. You see what I mean? Right? So the goal is to win the SEC, but like maybe four teams will get into the playoffs, maybe five, who knows, right? And that's going to be the real goal now. It's like, oh, well, we didn't get the trophy for the league this year, but we're in Europe, right? We're in the playoffs. So playoffs? What you talking about? Playoffs?
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
And you know what else is coming? A week from tonight.
Barbecue.
The barbecue is coming. I can smell it already. I can smell
the wood smoking.
I've already got our sound effects set up. I went ahead and figured out what they're going to be this time, and I've already drawn up the plot line for it. And
oh, for a muse of fire!
Shakespeare is ready. We're going to have a good one, and it's going to tell us what to look for in the SEC this year. John, you know, I was thinking the other day how Gus Malzahn, as we pronounce it, he famously wrote a book called The Hurry Up, No Huddle, An Offensive Philosophy. And I thought, well, that lasted like half of, you know, that lasted 2013 and maybe half of 2014, and then that went away. That it didn't age well, John, that title, that book. That book title didn't age well.
Okay.
And I thought, well, you know, that isn't the only coach's book that didn't, the title didn't age well. So I searched around and found a few others. Would you like to hear some of the other coaches' books that the title didn't age well, John? I got a handful.
Yes, I would. Bring it on.
We'll move through this quickly because we got other stuff to do tonight. But I thought that The Importance of Good Diction and Enunciation by Ed Orgeron didn't really age well. I know that there's a back-to-back, one of those books you turn over, and there's a book on the front and there's a book on the back. On one side is Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. On the back is How to Pick Up Girls While Laying Down Your Bike by Bobby Petrino. Didn't age well. Did not age well, that one. They Can't Fire You When Your Diddy Is Bobby by Terry Bowden. That didn't work out. Didn't work out so well. And also, he followed that up, Terry did, with The Safest Cliff Diving Techniques for All Swimmers by Terry Bowden. How to only break three ribs when you jump off Chimney Rock in Lake Martin. See, not everybody's going to get that one, but some of you remember when Terry Bowden taught us all how to cliff dive or not how to cliff dive. Set for Life, How to Parlay a National Championship Season into Decades of Employment at Your School by Gene Chizik. Didn't age well. Didn't age well, John. Did not. And then there was this series where this one prolific author, man, he wrote a whole series. Catfish Frying, A Career for a Lifetime by Tommy Tuberville. Didn't age well. How to Dominate the State of Alabama in Recruiting by Tommy Tuberville. Wow. Raise Those Fingers High, How Taunting Your Opponent Never Leads to Bad Things by Tommy Tuberville. Nick Saban, Not a Threat to Me by Tommy Tuberville. Football Coach for Life, How I'll Never Abandon the Sport I Love by Tommy Tuberville. And of course, the crowning final volume in the saga of Tommy Tuberville, The Seven Branches of Government by Tommy Tuberville. And finally, and lastly, and this is for you old timers out there that remember the 90s, Razorback for Life, How They'll Have to Carry Me Out of Fayetteville in a Pine Box by Jack Crow. There you go, John. Those are coaches' books that did not age well. Did not age well.
Please clap.
There you go. So, all right. We got to thank our patrons before we do any more shenanigans here, and then we'll get on to our last several things. We have a bunch of, I am led to believe that we have a number of listener questions.
The listeners have questions.
And we also have a Guess the Game coming up. We'll do that in just a second. But I'm going to go ahead and thank the patrons while I got this open, this window open. We could not do this insanity, this craziness, and have on great guests like Brian and do allegedly comedy bits like I just did and our listener questions without support from you, the listeners, and we really appreciate it. And we need more. We need to keep the ball rolling, keep the family growing. But we have to thank the ones we already have and hope that they stay around. And they, of course, include Chris and Clinton Stewart, Carl Von Drunker, Christopher Burleson, and Jeremiah Schumann, plus Patrick Hayes, and Samuel Salvatore. You are in the Hall of Fame, folks. We have Allison Rich, Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, Chris Usher, Gary Grant, Logan Chilton, Matthew Flowers, Michael Kirshner, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, and Willie Carden, all the great, great Auburn Patriots that they are. Ann Kangian, AU Falling Up, Ben and I Leaned Over. Man, you guys are rough on me. Ben Bloodworth, just talking to Ben earlier today, Chris Thrash, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Evers, David Hegler, Emmanuel Seaman, Eric Morgan, Bobby, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, looking forward to seeing them hopefully. Oh, actually, I think I heard they're not coming this year. I'm disappointed. Dragon High. John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Phil Davis, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Steve Harlan, there goes Davis, WDE Richie, Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, is that Coach Beard from Ted Lasso? Winston Boddy, and then we have, of course, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Cato the Barner, and Chris the Hilton, the great Holy Trinity there, Colby Butler, Danny Flack, Darris Benton, David Simpson, Di Bama, Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kinoy, Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Owlgorithm, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Ross, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston. All right, Harvey. This is the year Bo Nix has improved so much under this new offense. He's focused. He's having fun. I wouldn't be surprised if, that's all they can fit on there, Tim Pittman, Tony Perry, Alex Wynn, Auburn Elvis, Ben Amos, Ben Riggis, Bill Miner, Brandon Smith, Charles Mooney, Chris Como, Colonel Dad, Daniel Barnett, Darren Pyle, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, Elizabeth Donald, a new one, Ice Cream Clone, a new one, James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrecht, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, JT Jarhead, okay, Justin Bean, Kathy Bright, hey Kathy, see you soon, Kenneth Britt Rains, Kyle Cram Clams in Clean Clam Can, 76 Tiger. Mark Squire, Mick Vigicana, Paul Bankson, Public Land Owner. Robert Drain, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Spanky, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Brent Rumble, Chris, plus who? Plus our one time and our great anonymous donors. We thank you all. We thank you all so much. Go to www.auwishbone.com. All right, and now we have Guess the Game. You ready for Guess the Game, John?
I am ready.
Jared, the yard sale artist, Albrecht, always does a great job. Most of the time does a great job. Sometimes he's baffled us of coming up with great plays. And here, let's see what we have this week. Who can it be
now? Greetings and salutations, Van, John, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist, here with Guess the Game 23. Guess the Game 23 is brought to you by listener Richard Stevens, who sent in this one.
Cool,
Richard. Even included a link for me to use and told me right where to go with a timestamp on that link. I appreciate that, Richard. All right, guys, let's listen to Guess the Game 23 as brought to you by Richard Stevens.
Lot to the far side. In the shotgun. Third and about eight. Off the pump fake, rolls to the left. Going to throw out in the flat, and the receiver's hit and lost the ball. Auburn ball, got the fumble on the lane. Auburn's got it at the 32 or 3. Auburn's come up with a loose ball. Somebody jarred him loose, and I believe he's got it. 42 seconds to go. Wait a minute. The receiver on the play was really jolted, and Auburn appeared to come up with a loose ball. I think the Tigers should have it here.
Auburn's got the ball.
42 seconds to go at 33 or 4.
All right, Van and John, what do you got on that?
I'm so happy to say that my streak of having no clue is done, because I know this one. I do know this one. What are you thinking?
Well, I have two thoughts. The first is it's 2013 Mississippi State. every game is Team Mississippi State. I'm just going to keep guessing that. The other one is, I'm not sure. Is it the Ed Sism screen pass play against Alabama at the end of the game when they're trying to drive or run out the clock at the end of the game and Auburn causes a fumble on a little screen pass Ed Sism, the Alabama fullback?
We relitigated this on Twitter and in the book, because that season is next to last in the book, mm-hmm. and talked about how everybody gave the offensive coordinator crap for calling a pass when they just need to run out the clock. And my point was, the pass wasn't the problem. He caught the ball, or it would have been an incomplete pass.
And it was a safe pass.
Yeah. It was. The problem wasn't the pass. The problem was that he fumbled. And he knew that, because he was the one that was so down. And here's the crazy part about it. Once we kicked the field goal to go up 18-17, we kicked off, and guess who returned the kickoff? Ed Sism, and he took it back past the 50-yard line. Like he was going to single-handedly make up for his mistake on one play. And I'm like, here we go. They're going to come out and kick a Van Tiffin field goal, you know. So, yeah, the third thought you had that you didn't say, but I know it was yeah, you were pretty confident last time, and you. This is how you got in that streak of being wrong. See, me is being so confident.
No, you got to get your mojo back in this. Yeah. I want you to be confident. I want you to know.
I'm pretty confident about this one.
So, what year was the Ed Sism game? You said it was the second to last year in the book. Is that 97, 98, 99?
97 is correct. It was Terry. Okay. Terry. It was the Damian Craig senior year. Terry Bowden's last good year.
Mm-hmm.
His last complete year. All right, let's hear the Kent thing just to be sure.
Okay, gentlemen, you are now in the hint file. So let's get rid of those bleeps and give it a listen.
Lot to the far side. Kitchens in the shotgun. Third and about eight. Kitchens off the pump fake. Rolls to the left. Going to throw out in the flat. And the receiver's hit and lost the ball. Auburn's got the fumble on the lane. Auburn's got it at the Alabama 32 or 3. Auburn's come up with a loose ball. Somebody jarred him loose. Quentin Reese, and I believe he's got it. 42 seconds to go. Wait a minute. The receiver on the play was really jolted. And Auburn appeared to come up with a loose ball. I think the Tigers should have it here.
Auburn's got the ball.
42 seconds to go at the Alabama 33 or 4.
Freddie Kitchens.
I was thinking it was Montavious Houston that hit him or recovered the fumble. Maybe Jim didn't know. By the way, that's another clue, is that was Jim Fife.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's and his last season was 02. So it had to be before 03. So, yeah. But I feel pretty good that it's 97 Alabama. Well, obviously, it's Alabama. You feel good about it?
Yeah, because Freddie Kitchens is quarterback, too.
Yep. Freddie, my favorite rooms are kitchen. Let's go to the final file.
Okay, John Van, if you guys decided that this was the 1997 Iron Bowl Auburn versus Alabama with a last-second fumble that allowed us to win that game, well, then you are correct, and congratulations. And once again, thanks to Richard Stevens for sending that in. If you want to send in an idea for Guess the Game, I have a bunch in the backlog right now, but that doesn't mean we won't get to yours. Just send it to @YardSaleArtist, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. It's all @YardSaleArtist. And gentlemen, War Eagle.
All right, good job as always by Jared. And thanks to Richard for sending in a good one, because it was a good one. I mean, whether we happen to know it or not, it's still a good one. You know, still a good.
That was a good one because it was. We had to think about it, mm-hmm. And it was a good game to think about and talk about. So thank you, Jared and Richard.
Yeah, and you guys have got your copies. And that reminds me, I was going to say something about this. If you got your copies of We Believe, just skip on to chapter 5, to part 5, where we talk about Terry Bowden, and there's a whole bunch about that game in there. I wanted to tell our folks that have been waiting on our signed copies that allegedly they are en route to John. So we've just been total victims of waiting on Amazon, and we apologize. There's really nothing we could do. They just decided to take a lot longer to ship a box full of books than they did to ship individual ones. So it really kind of sucks for everybody. It's been making me pull what's left of my hair out, but they should be going really soon. Let's see. I guess it's time. Let me. I've got so many things open on my desktop right now, I can't figure out what I'm doing. But I think,
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, 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 on the AU Wishbone podcast.
And I'm to understand that we have a few.
We have the listeners are excited about football season and they have questions.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's hear it. Let's fire it up.
All right. First question comes from our friend Jay Knoll, who says, please discuss the fun destinations that could happen for Gatewood. He says, like, number one, LSU, he gets to face Bo, so an Auburn QB could still lose in Death Valley that day. Or number two, Ole Miss, of course, injury needs to happen, but he will face Malik and Bo in the regular season if he was a starting Ole Miss quarterback. Well, so not a realistic destination, but what's a fun destination?
Well, the two funny ones to me, one is that he goes to LSU and basically we swap quarterbacks with him.
Mm-hmm.
And two is
if we start Finley and they start him.
Yeah. And two, or they could both be backups at both places. And two is if he went to Central Florida, because I'm sure the coach at Central Florida would give him a lot more fair shake than he got when he first came to Auburn. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. Which always struck me as odd that Big Cat Bryant complained about some things about his tenure at Auburn and then goes to the school that has the same exact coach. But okay, whatever works for you. So where would you send Gatewood for fun?
I mean, on the realistic side, he needs to go somewhere where he can play. So if he needs to drop down a level, go to a smaller school, I think that's what he needs to do.
Blinn College?
I don't know about a junior college, but he needs to go somewhere where they're going to run an offense that he can be successful in. Yeah. Right, where they're already playing, they have that kind of offense, and they're going to have that kind of offense. So, I mean, somebody that's running more the single wing kind of stuff. And then, you know, it would be ironic if he went to Central Florida and had success. So, in a related question, Jane, I'll ask, what would be your emotional state if we ever got placed into a bowl game against Central Florida? Would we be relaxed or on the verge of nausea?
Nausea.
One side can be the fun of the Gus's bowl record. The other side, the aftermath, if we lose, would be unbearable.
Yeah, that's true. If you had to pick one coach to go against in a bowl game, honestly, it's hard not to choose Gus. I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, he can win you we beat Purdue. We beat the pants off of Purdue, and we won in Birmingham, and that was it. That was it. So, but, yeah, I would be pretty nauseous. I plan on watching Central Florida this year and following them and kind of halfway rooting for them as like a, you know, another thing to watch when I'm not watching Auburn. But I don't think I want to see him play
anytime soon. We've saw how Gus prepared to focus his team when he played Arkansas. I don't think we want any part of that. I'm not interested in that. So.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point.
All right. And a few more questions. Next from Carl Von Drucker on Twitter. Who says, on a scale of 1 to 10, Where do you think the offensive line could be by the Penn State game? We've heard it was one of the biggest leaps before between games 2 and 3. So in roughly a month, where are they at now and where could they be then, basically?
Well, I mean, I wish I had I wish I had information. I mean, you know, even Brian, who for a living keeps up with this stuff, couldn't tell us a whole lot beyond just that they're kind of a work in progress. And so, I mean, how quickly – look, here's the magic word for offensive lines, right? Gel. How quickly can they at all, if they're going to, gel?
But I think, again, what I want to say, what I was talking about with Brian earlier is we have not tried to create a unit yet. Okay, right. We have evaluated individual players to see their strengths and weaknesses and who could do what and that kind of thing.
That's true.
To see how they could you give everybody a good shot and evaluate them to see who could be among the, you know, the starting five or the best five or six or seven players on the offensive line, right? And then what spots would make the most sense? And then now I think you take that information and try to go ahead and start forming your offensive line. You put them together and you spend a couple of weeks repping them together as a five and then kind of the second five consistently, right? Mm-hmm. And you do that and then we get to the gel phase. So we haven't even tried to gel yet. So I think the defense is always ahead of the offense, but I think the offensive line, we haven't tried the gel yet. If they practice together with the same five people for 2 or 3 weeks and then this happens, or this, you know, they're mediocre in the first game against Akron, then I'll be concerned. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to be better, and I think by the Penn State game, they'll be okay. I don't think they're going to be world beaters, but I think in the running game, I think they can be good. I legitimately think they can be solid in the running game, productive.
Well, with the backs that we have, I think that doesn't hurt.
That's right, but I think the backs, the scheme, the threat of Bo Nix running, the tight ends and helping block and stuff. I think the running game, they could be solid.
Yeah.
So
good defense, solid offense.
That's right.
But we can't speak authoritatively, though, until we have the barbecue in front of us.
That's true. I'm not predicting the season. We're just talking about the offensive line.
That's right.
All right. Next question. This is kind of a different one from J.D. Schumann who emailed us at auwishbone@gmail.com, who said, Vane and John, what made you personally an Auburn fan, and was your decision to attend Auburn a result of being a fan before attending college, or was it because of your choice of studies?
That's called Chapter 1. I mean, we specifically addressed that in Chapter 1 and in Episode 1 of the show of We Believed. But I'll give them a little quick slice, right? Well, go ahead. Because I asked you that exact thing. We talked about it. We talked about it a little bit. So let's make it a quick one.
Sure. I grew up an Auburn fan. My parents both went to Auburn, and they had season tickets, so we went to Auburn games when I was a child. And so I did grow up a fan. And so I applied to Auburn and other schools. But I really loved, you know, Auburn and the atmosphere there. And so that was why I chose it.
My favorite answer is Jeremy Henderson of the publisher of the War Eagle Reader saying, like, it's crazy, but I'm living the best life I can with this. Because all the crazy stuff he's done, you know, as an Auburn, you know, from the War Eagle Reader to his band where he sung about 11-0 and beat Bama and everything while the rest of the band is like, why are you singing about that? But, yeah, with me, I think I've said my dad went to Auburn. My granddad was a huge Auburn fan. I grew up in Sylacauga, you know, like an hour and 15 minutes up the highway on the way to Birmingham. And so, I mean, there was never any chance. My mother's side of the family is Alabama fans, but my dad's side were all Auburn fans. And then there's a whole story in the book about I had a jacket somebody gave me that had Auburn on it. And so you can read that. And it's
In terms of the other part of his question, Ben and I got to know each other because we were both in political science and international relations stuff. But Model I don't UN. Think either one of us looked around and were like, we're going there because of political science and international relations.
No. It's not like I looked at schools all over the country for the best political science department. Now, I did that kind of thing for graduate school, which is how we both kind of ended up at Georgetown and then I ended up at Emory. But yeah, for Auburn, it was like, I'm going to go to Auburn to go to college. Now I'm going to figure out why I'm here.
That's right.
Beyond playing basketball and Nintendo and staying up all night. And
season tickets.
Yeah, and going to football games for $4 a game and basketball for $1. And unless you showed up at halftime, then it was free. Imagine that, man. If you showed up at halftime for an Auburn basketball game when we were students, you got in for free. They just let you walk right in. They didn't care.
I didn't care.
No. Got to see Chris Morris for free. Man. That's awesome. All right. What else we got?
Listener question from Michael Kirshner.
Yeah.
Who says, what are the odds that Van will learn how to pronounce J.J. Pegues' name this season? He says, it sounds like he had an impact during the scrimmage. Do you think this was just the defense being way ahead of the offense in the scrimmage, or is this a glimpse of things to come?
People seem to think that J.J. Pegues is going to have...
So, Michael, the odds are not good, but keep going.
Hey, I can't pronounce some of them. Sometimes you can't spell them. So between the two of us, we're kind of train wreck. But, no, it sounds like everything has been pointing toward him doing really, really well there, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, again, I think to back up a level, like, I think the defense as a whole should be ahead at this point. But also, I think the defense is going to be the strength of the team. I think the defense is going to be really, really good at all three levels, defensive line, linebacker, secondary. I think going to be really strong. It's going to be one of the better defenses in the country. And it's going to keep us in games. I think they're going to make plays and keep us in games. And maybe with some of the stuff that Brian talked about, the pass rushing kind of thing that we haven't had for a while, maybe the ability to cause some havoc on the other team and make some things happen in a disruptive way that we haven't been able to do in defense in a while kind of help the offense like you always talk about. So, Pegues has the athletic ability to be a dominating defensive lineman. He just doesn't have the technique and the reps to get there, but he will. I think he'll play some this season. He'll be a backup and he'll play, you know, a few snaps a game in each half or whatever, and get in there and get in so they can get him some experience and get him some film and get him some time playing against SEC players. But also we're going to need depth. I mean, we need depth on the defensive line, and he's a big, strong, athletic guy who can clearly make plays when given the opportunity. So I think he's somebody that's going to get in there and play some. I mean, I feel like, you know, you got him, you got Lee Hunter, you know, you got guys that came in last year, like Colby Wooden and Zacavius Walker. I mean, we got some young, talented guys on the defensive line that I think can cause some havoc. So,
and it's not like he was in every play of the game on offense either. I always felt like they didn't use him enough last year on offense. So at least he'll get some – maybe he'll get – I mean, I don't know how much playing time he's going to get, but it can't be much less than he – because, you know, Gus was doing that thing he does where he has a player that can do one thing, and so he only puts him on the field when it's time to do – for him to do that one thing, and the whole defense knows, oh, look, there he is. I guess we know what play is coming. So Devin Barrett phenomenon.
I will not miss that at all. And I would say, again, my expectations for J.J. Pegues. I just talked about my expectations for this year. My expectations for 2 years from now, all-conference.
There you go.
He's going to be an all-conference defensive lineman in 2023.
I like it.
All right. Next question is from Joshua Corbett, who says, hey, guys, I got my book in the mail, and I am enjoying it.
Yes. That's the first like actual I'm enjoying it feedback we've gotten. We've gotten a lot of pictures and stories. It came. I'm going to be reading it tonight. I'm looking at it. Even Dee Ford in Britain got hers and was saying she's looking forward to it. But this is the first time somebody has said, I'm reading it. I'm enjoying it. That's good. I've been a little worried.
Some members of my family have read it, and they enjoyed it and gave good feedback. So.
Good.
So his question pertains to, what should our expectations for this Auburn team be this year? We've seen the first-year head coaches go 6-6 at Auburn, and we've seen first-year head coaches lead a team to a national championship. So with that in mind, what should we expect from Brian Harsin and this 2021 football team?
I know. Is this Tuberville, Pat Dye first year, or is this Terry Bowden, Gus Malzahn first year? I mean, I don't – well – see, here's the thing. The ones that had these amazing first years, what they tended to do was, and it's a tendency of like two, but I mean, what happened both years was that we had good recruiting, but the coaching staff were both kind of at the end of their rope, and a new coach with like some, you know, new excitement and a new philosophy comes in and kind of gets the most out of the existing talent. I don't think that that's the case of what we have right now. I think we're a fairly decent team that did fairly decently last year, and in an incredibly difficult schedule this year is going to do fairly decently.
But we're not predicting anything yet.
No. But I have a feeling this is going to be more like a, you know, Tuberville Chizik kind of start than it is like a Terry Bowden kind of start.
This is our next question is a related question. This is from Bart Lindsay, who says, each first-year head coach from Pat Dye Ford had varying levels of success. Dye 5-6, Bowden 11-0, Tuberville 5-6, Chizik 8-5, Malzahn 12-2, Harsin ? But which coach entered his first year as Auburn's head coach, inheriting the most talented roster? Rank the aforementioned coaches from most talented to least talented first year roster.
Wow.
This question is right up our alley.
This is 100% our thing. All right. So I think that the one that inherited the least talent is it
I was gonna say Dye or is it
It's either Dye or Tuberville. It's either Dye or Tuberville.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you want to come off of the tale of Barfield or Terry Bowden 98?
The other thing is, it's the level of competition, right?
Yeah.
I think the competition was higher when Tuberville was coming off Terry.
All right. So who's last? Who had the least talent then? It's a coin flip.
I'm going to say Dye, but what do you think?
I think Dye. I think what Barfield did have was gone by 81, except for Lionel James.
I agree.
Lionel James was pretty much all, and a couple of defensive linemen was all that Dye got. So we got Dye at the bottom, and then I think Terry.
Then Tuberville.
Tuberville. So Dye, then Tubbs. You got to think that.
You got to pick Chizik at 8-5 or this team?
I think Gus is at the top because he got a team that was able to immediately go to a national championship game. You got to have talent. I got Gus at the top in terms of inheriting talent.
Is there the most talent?
Yeah.
Do you think so? We got Dye Tuberville at the bottom, and then Chizik. I think right. I think that team, you know, without Cam Newton.
'09. Yeah.
'09 was a solid team, but not a great team. Right.
Right. It had the parts that when you added a few key components, it could be a 14-0 team, but. By the grace of God, and Cam Newton, which is kind of the same thing. But yeah, so who does that leave? Who am I leaving out?
So the current team.
Okay.
The current team versus the 09 team. Or and then we got Bowden.
Bowden. Terry inherited Dye and went 11-0. He's right below Gus, I think.
But I agree. I don't think that team had as much talent as the 13.
No, it's close. So I got Gus number one, Terry number two, and then Chizik, Tuberville, and Dye at the bottom.
Okay, and then where would you put this current team on the scale of returning talent in this? I think it's in the Chizik range.
I think they have more than Chizik's 09 team.
Okay.
Which is interesting because Chizik's 09 team only needed a couple of extra players to win the national championship. So. So I'm putting Harsin third.
A couple of extra players, including one of the greatest players ever to play.
If you took the team we have right now and you put 2010 Cam Newton and 2010 Nick Fairley on it with the kicker we have, with Tank.
With the defense we have.
With the defense we have, which I think is better than the 2010 defense.
Yes.
And the only question mark I'd have is the offensive line. Is it going to be as good as 2010? Ooh. I don't know. And the running backs are good. I don't think they're probably better because, I mean, Tank, Dyer, you know, kind of a wash.
And then you need
a receiver you can depend on. But
Grant, a little underrated, right?
Yeah.
McCaleb.
Yeah. Oh, McCaleb gave you something, though, that I don't know. We had Grant in 13. Yeah, we had Grant in 13. Yeah, we did.
We're talking about
9-10. 9-10, yeah. 2010, we had McCaleb and Dyer and Fannin.
Fannin, yeah.
And Eric Smith at fullback or H-back. So which running back stable would you rather have? Dyer, McCaleb, Fannin, or Tank Bigsby, Shivers, and the freshman guy?
I tell you what, if you pick the current group, you are putting a lot on Tank Bigsby.
You are.
I'm just saying that. I think the other guys are better. The second and third guys are better on the 09-010 team. But I so
Well, Fannin was so good at catching a dump pass.
He was productive.
But you know what he also was good at?
Fumbling.
We remember that. Bless his heart.
We started recording this podcast in 2012. We made a lot of Mario Fannin fumbling comments over the
years. Bless his heart. Yeah, but I mean, I guess I'm just saying that. Yeah, the supporting cast on offense around Cam was maybe a step better than what we have right now.
That's fair. My expectations for Tank Bigsby are way up there. So I mean, I could pick the current group and just say, like, I think he's going to be a superstar.
Straight up, would you rather have, if you had a draft an Auburn team, would you rather have Tank Bigsby or Micah Dyer? Michael Dyer. Because we don't know as much about Tank yet as we do about Dyer.
Yes.
Well, but Dyer had the issues, though. You know what I mean? You can't depend on
him. Yeah, but I mean, but you're saying Dyer going into 10.
Yeah,
Tank going into this coming year.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Well, the fact that there's not an easy answer is a positive for this year's team.
Yeah. Yes.
Because if you just said Dyer, boom.
Dyer was a very good running back.
He could have been even better if he had his head on straight. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. All right. That was a good question. That was good.
See? Good listener questions this week. Great
job. Absolutely. Is that all?
That is it.
Wow. All right.
Please clap.
That was good. That was very, very good. And we got through that whole thing without.
I don't have facts to back this up.
That's right. But we had a lot of opinions, so we got through it. So that's good. All right, let me move things around again, and we'll bring this sucker in for a landing. So, let's really quickly, I'm going to play it just because I haven't played it much in a while. If it's working, there it goes.
Dispel once and for all
let's
with this
take
fiction.
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
Come on, man.
All right, what do we got going on around the SEC? We talked about Kentucky and Gatewood, maybe I can remember his name. Now he doesn't play for us anymore. Maybe entering the transfer portal. I'm not going to play that again. So, anything else going on? I thought that Brian had some interesting comments about LSU being overrated.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, like we know, we talked about last week. The quarterback's hurt.
Yeah,
go to Max Johnson, and they're trying to recreate the magic, right? I mean, they had the two great coordinators, Brady and Aranda, and they both left last year. They hired replacements who were terrible, and they fired them. So, again, if you're an offensive or defensive player at LSU, third coordinator in 3 years. So it's the learning curve thing there, different terminology, all that kind of stuff. And I just think, like, I think things are kind of slipping away from them a little bit.
You sent Orgeron back in time to the Middle Ages, you know what his brother would say?
No.
My brother is possessed by the devil and must be examined.
Come on with that.
I'm possessed by the devil, football.
So Texas A&M is definitely going to finish ahead of them in the West, aren't they? That's not a barbecue question. I'm just, in general, I think A&M.
In general, yes. That is what most predictions are saying at this point. Most of the polls and the power ranking stuff.
The barbecue is already speaking to me from far distance and telling me that this is going to be a tough one just because the whole West is just going to be stacked this year. When Ole Miss is looking as good as they are, I mean, when you're looking at a Mike Leach coach team and saying, there's our low point on the division, that's not good for the rest of you. That's your Vanderbilt in the West is freaking Mike Leach, Mississippi State, with probably a 5,000-yard passer or something.
And we're back to the days, I think, where the bottom half or the bottom two-thirds of the East is crap.
Ugh, unbalanced. I don't love the 16 team. I didn't love the 14 team SEC. But we got to get the competitive balance fixed. And if going to 16 and then discarding the divisions and just kind of mixing it up, you know, just shuffling all the tiles around on the Scrabble board, if that's the way to do it, I can't see it happen soon enough. I can't have it happen soon enough. All right. Any other around the SECs?
No, not that I can think of. I mean, we got to watch out. There's a lot of teams practicing right now. There's some injuries around and some depth chart shuffling at this point and that kind of thing. But nothing huge or overly dramatic at this point.
All right. So everybody remember that we are that John and I will be traveling to Texas A&M for our road trip. I had an idea, John, and I'm thinking about we're already going to document this trip pretty profoundly on audio and video, but I'm going to take
a documentary?
We're going to do essentially that anyway. Yes, we're going to make a lot of little mini pieces, I'm thinking. But if there, the day may come where we want to hit all the way stadiums and do like a book, John and Van's, and then a video to go along with it, like a movie of our travel around the entire SEC. And if we do that, we might as well go ahead and start filing away some tidbits for it now so we don't have to go back to it when we're like 75 or something. So I'm just going to be keeping that in mind. I mean, nothing may ever come of it, but in case we ever decide to do kind of a trip around an actual trip around the SEC, we'd go ahead and knock Texas A&M out in year one, see? So
I like it.
All right. So we should file a few things around. But anyway, so we're going to be doing that coming up in November, and we're able to do things like that because of you, the patron. So go to www.auwishbone.com, become a patron, and help us out to produce bigger, greater stuff than we've, you know, been able to do so far and keep everything else going. So, all right. Any last thoughts?
The list of questions, the discussion with Brian tonight, it's on the horizon. You know, the distant horizon. Is. Football is out there, and it's coming, and we're starting to get a little excited. I have to be honest. I glimpsed ahead to the week one TV schedule this weekend.
Yeah. Hey,
that's cool. I was like, oh, yeah. All right. I see it.
That purple LSU football website that I go to all the time, I keep it bookmarked. It's so good.
LSUfootball.net, best TV schedule in the world.
They are so good. If they've given us nothing else, they've given us Orgeron, and they've given us that website, which is the Lord's gift to football fans.
It's way better than Orgeron. It's much more important.
It's much better, yes. And it's not related to the devil. All right. We're going to wrap up and get out of here. And you know what? I even did a bit. I haven't done a comedy bit in ages, but I dusted one off. And, well, I didn't. I created a whole new one just for the night. So there you go. You got an interview. You got great listener questions. And you got a comedy bit.
And guess the game.
Jared comes through again. People, you can't ask for much more than this. We got it all in an hour and 15 minutes. All right. We're going to get out of here. Our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.